Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. Yesterday I did a short talk on some of the metaphors in the Sandokai. Today I'd like to do another short talk, which I give a little of the background of this scripture as I understand it. This is in no way intended to be comprehensive, but I want to make a few points, some of which I've made before, or at least one of which I've never made before, because I never thought of it before today. First of all, this is admittedly, of all of the scriptures that we recite frequently, I think this is the most difficult one to kind of get our heads around. And I think that there's a good reason for that. It's the most difficult one to translate. And the most difficult one in particular to translate into a form that is really a brief, chantable scripture. You could translate this in any number of ways, and as long as you provide a good, long, detailed explanation of your translation, there's no big problem having at least a rudimentary understanding of what this is about. The problem is that it's written in a kind of code, and there's no way you can kind of decode it in a poetic, chantable way. I think Reverend Master Jiyu did as good a job as you can do, as can be done. But it leaves, and of necessity leaves, some of these metaphors simply not explained. And that's why I've probably spent more time on giving explanations of this scripture than probably all the rest of our scriptures put together. Both because I've always found it that the code a little baffling and puzzling myself, and am always to some degree or other, I'm always kind of chewing on it in the back of my mind how to understand it a little better. But also because, like Reverend Master Ji herself, I feel very strongly that people in chanting our scriptures should have a concept of the meaning of what they're chanting. I'm not of the school that says, well, this is sacred scripture and you should just kind of take it, chant it, and make your chanting your meditation. You don't have to understand anything about what you're saying to benefit from it. Well, actually, that's true. You don't have to understand anything about what you're chanting to benefit from just meditatively chanting it, because it's really the meditation and the doing of it with simple faith that wherein most of the benefit lies. But if at all possible, you know, the ideal is for people to be able to somewhat readily, without having to be, have a degree in Buddhist studies from a prestigious university, you should be able to chant our scriptures and have some sense of what they're about. Well, I think it's safe to say that most people coming to the Sandokai simply without some kind of explanation, without some kind of background in Buddhist studies, would simply be baffled by this scripture. As I tried to show yesterday, these metaphors do break down into something that is readily understandable. Perhaps it's speaking beyond the experience of many people. again, as I said yesterday, nothing short of a Kensho is going to really illuminate the meaning fully. Because it is talking about the relationship between the eternal and our daily life, between the eternal and our daily experience. Now, another thing about the Sandokai that I pointed out before is that it's using what was at the time that this was written by Great Master Sekito Kisen. At the time this was written, it's using metaphors that were well understood, especially the light-dark metaphor was well understood by the people who were reciting it, at least by many of them. And that the meaning of these metaphors would have been taught to people in the monasteries. The light-dark metaphor, as I've often said, and as River Master Jiu taught me, the light-dark metaphor had a very special meaning in the Huayan school of Buddhism. And this school of Buddhism, which was based itself on the Avatamsaka Sutra, this school of Buddhism provided the intellectual and philosophical basis for what developed as Zen, for the Zen movement. I don't know if it's true to say that the Zen movement grew out of the Huayan school of Buddhism. I don't think that's probably quite accurate. But the teachings developed within Huayan Buddhism definitely carried over into Zen. And Huayan Buddhism, as the scripture on which it's based, the Avatamsaka Sutra, is deeply concerned about the relationship between the all is one and the all is different. Well, if we call the all is one the eternal and the all is different our ordinary daily life, the experience of our daily life, what we experience in our daily life, you put it any number of ways. You can see that that's the basic theme of religion itself. That's the most important question there is in life. So it's understandable that Zen would probably, I would suspect, share with all of Chinese Buddhism the influence of the Huayan school and its reflections of these masters, these teachers, on this fundamental religious question. In fact, I've read that some of the early Zen masters were themselves Huayan masters. Anyway, again, as I have said before, the metaphor of light, you could think of it this way, that we're able to discriminate between, say, a tree and a car and a car and a chair and a chair and a human being. We can make these basic distinctions in vision because light illuminates the objects of our perception. In a completely dark room, or in the blackest night, even though these things exist out there, we can't perceive them. There's undifferentiated darkness, blackness. So, again, as I understand it, the light metaphor came to represent the all is different, and the black metaphor, the darkness metaphor, came to represent the all is one. in Huayan Buddhism and in early Zen. So when we see the light and dark, the use of the terms light and dark in the Sandokai, this is my understanding of what it's saying. That there is, when it says there is darkness and light in darkness, it's saying the all is one is within the all is different, and the all is different is within the all is one. There is an interpenetration. There is no complete separateness. In other words, to put it in more pragmatic terms, once again, it is to say that your ordinary daily life, your ordinary experience is not as separate from the eternal as you may think of it as being. So let's consider another reason why this point might be something that the early Zen masters might really hammer away on. Well, and for that matter, later Zen masters, not just the early ones. At the same time that Zen was developing, there was also developing in China the Shin school of Buddhism. And both of these schools, the Zen school, especially Soto Zen, which is the largest of the Zen schools that still exists, the Zen schools and the Shin schools still exist in Buddhism. In fact, in Mahayana Buddhism, I believe there are more people in the Shin or Pure Land tradition than there are in any other tradition, I believe, in Mahayana Buddhism, which means, you know, you're talking about numbers in the hundreds of millions. Nowadays, of course, there may be more of a kind of mixture of schools in coming, especially in, out of Chinese or in Chinese Buddhism. What is the teaching in a formal sense of Shin Buddhism? Well, first of all, you know, it teaches the Four Noble Truths, the Eightfold Path. These are taught in Shin Buddhism as well as in the rest of Buddhism. Shin Buddhism, in addition, has a particular kind of meditation that is that developed. And that is the chanting of the Nembutsu, Homage Amida Buddha, Homage Amida Buddha. This repeated chanting of a kind of mantra or a prayer, and I think it's fair to call it a prayer. This repeated chanting of a mantra or prayer is a kind of meditation. And there's a teaching that went along with this that was kind of underpinning it, and that is that by sincerely calling upon the Buddha of the Western Paradise, Amida Buddha, for help, you could be reborn into the Western Paradise. And so there's a kind of hope for the future in this. Rather than continued rebirth in the realm of suffering, you could be reborn into a realm that was free from suffering. Now you might say, look at this as skillful means to help people who don't think they can sit down and do quiet meditation, Zen meditation, and who think that they can't do that, to help those people meditate. And I'm sure that many of those people become wonderful meditators because, you know, it's the sincerity of heart and repeated practice. Those two things will cut through any obstacles. and convert any unconverted karma with time, sincerity of heart, and repeated practice. But there were those in Chinese Buddhism, as there are those in Buddhism today, who, for whom that particular teaching, who do not find that particular teaching about a future state in a Western paradise to be as helpful as a teaching that you can realize the truth fully and directly in this lifetime, and before you die, you can experience enlightenment and you can convert your karma so that there's no need for rebirth in a future paradise. That you can find the Buddha within birth at death, within birth and death, in this very lifetime. And this is strongly the emphasis in Zen. It's this faith in finding that we can find what the Buddha found, as the Buddha found it, that underpins the whole of Buddhist meditation, or the whole of Zen meditation, excuse me, the whole of Zen meditation. The Buddha sat down under the Bodhi tree, meditated, found a way of quiet acceptance, and accepted the things he had been fighting, accepted his own humanity at last. And in that all acceptance, and in that profound stillness that comes with all acceptance, he was fully enlightened. And it is the faith that this can happen to us too that underpins the fundamental faith that underpins the practice of meditation itself. That the truth is not somewhere in the future or somewhere spatially distant from us. The truth is here and now, in Soto Zen, that faith has been carried even deeper, and you see this fully exemplified in the wonderful teachings of Dogen. He says, don't even wait for that enlightenment to, that lightning bolt of enlightenment to hit you. Realize that meditation, pure meditation, is the Dharma itself come alive in you, living in you. So now let's come back for a moment to the Sandokai. As I said yesterday, the point of the Sandokai is to really hammer home that teaching that we talked about at the end of the talk yesterday. If from your experiences of the senses, from your experience of the senses, basic truth you do not know, how can you ever find the path that certain is, no matter how far distant you may walk? I'll read the preceding lines. I'll read that again, but I'll read the preceding lines because it's so important. He really is, like I say, hammering the point home. Completely understand herein the basic truth within these words. Lo, here, set up not your own standards. In other words, put your own opinions, your own emotions aside, and look the truth, look this truth straight in the eye. And what is this truth? If in the course of your daily life you cannot find the truth, then you're not going to find it anywhere. But the truth is that you can find it in the course of your daily life, and it is here and now. See, I've just done some major paraphrasing, but I'm saying what he meant. I'm saying what this scripture means. Why is he hammering on it? He could be saying, you've heard this teaching of a Western paradise that you can be reborn into. That's well and good, but you don't have to wait. You don't have to wait. If you have enough faith in yourself, if you have enough faith in the eternal, why not go for it right now? Don't underestimate your own capacity or the capacity of any other being to realize the truth right now. Don't underestimate your own capacity to do true meditation. However difficult it has been in the past, however you may have fallen down in the past, whatever mistakes you have made in the past, whatever terrible things may have happened to you in the past, let go of the past. Whatever might be the case in the future, let go of worrying about the future. Let go of fear about the future. Don't worry about the past. Don't fear the future. Live now without evil. Only when you concentrate your mind will Buddhas appear. Why not concentrate your mind now and trust that Buddhas will appear? Don't look for your true refuge in external things. Mindfulness is all. Look for it in meditation. These are all just different ways of saying the same thing. And of course, Soto Zen meditation, serene reflection, quiet sitting. No mantra, no formal koan, just sitting. That wonderful practice, which does exactly what it claims it can do, that wonderful practice is the practice that goes with this wonderful teaching. Homage to all the Buddhas in all worlds. Homage to all the Bodhisattvas in all worlds. Homage to the scripture of great wisdom.